This is Audible.
Oh My Audiobooks presents Sin With Me, Book 1 of Original Sin, written by J.A. Huss and Jonathan McLean, performed by Tad Branson and Ava Erickson.
For anyone who has ever slipped and kept climbing. Chapter 1. Tyler. I never dreamed heaven would look like this. To be fair, for a long time I never really dreamed at all. I trained myself not to. Because the dreams I hoped for would never come, and nightmares would fill the void. So maybe what I mean to say is that I never imagined heaven would look like this. I don't know. Semantics. Point is that had I dreamed or imagined or fucking speculated on an idea of heaven, I doubt very much that it would look the way it does spread out before me now. Which is kind of like an Apple store, but without a bunch of goddamn computers and watches and shit. Just clean white desks against clean white walls. That aren't actually walls because there seems to be no terminus to the sprawl. And lots of people asking stupid questions. Oh. And it smells like frankincense. I know because I got used to the smell when I was stationed in Somalia. I like it. It grows on you. The angels, I'm assuming that's what they are overly friendly. Not to some, I suppose, but I don't trust anyone who's too nice. Never have. And just because they're angels doesn't mean they get a pass. Fucking angels. And besides, okay, sure, it's heaven and all, but that means I'm dead. And I don't need some cocksucking angel trying to make me feel okay about it. I wonder if they get paid. Probably not. Not in money, at least. In eternal salvation or whatever. Whoopee. Oh, and they're wingless. No wings? Yeah, I really don't trust these fuckers. One of them did get me a cup of tea, though. She was pretty hot. The blue shirts they wear on Earth tend to make them look kind of shapeless, but this angel chick has tits that defy the laws of physics. And they're real. I kind of brushed up against them when she brought me the tea. Mostly by accident. So, yeah, she's definitely some kind of angel. I've never fucked an angel before. I wonder what that would be like. The tea is Robois, I think. I also like Robois. Developed a taste for it in Saudi Arabia, even though Robois is from South Africa. Not that these things matter. Details. So, here I sit, in clean, white, frankincense-infused heaven, being tended to by blue-shirted, perfect-titted, wingless angels, drinking a cup of what I think is Robois tea, waiting to talk with, I assume, God, who, based on the current surroundings, will look like, I don't know, probably James Franco. And I'm dreading it. Because as soon as he checks the list on his God Book Pro, he will realize that there has been a huge fucking mistake and my tea will be taken from me and I will be escorted out and sent promptly to a place that, I have to assume, will replicate approximately the back of the line at the DMV. Or the bathroom of a Midtown Manhattan Starbucks. Or Afghanistan. Shit. That sucks. I really like it here with this tea, and that angel with the heavenly tits. I start wondering how I can talk him into letting me stay. And that's when the explosion happens. An eruption of flame that consumes all the clean and white, and paints it in a bleeding orange and piercing blue, followed by a shrieking red. The screams are familiar. I've heard them before. They aren't screams of pain, that comes in a moment. For now, they are screams of fear. Which is the worst, because fear implies hope. It means that they don't yet realize they're all already dead. People fighting against the inevitable always gives me the hardest time. I look over at my angel and she is still there. Only now she is wearing a hijab. Somehow the flames haven't touched her. All around her is a boiling cauldron of chaos, but she remains whole. I see her pretty green eyes, framed by the dark headdress, and try to let her know that while I can't save everyone, I can save her. I believe I can. So I start running through the flames and the wailing and the burning flesh. I reach her and time slows. She smiles. It's unsettling. Because it's not a smile of relief or joy, it's a smile of something else. Mournfulness. Accusation. She takes my face in her hands, and that's when I realize that she hasn't escaped the same fate as the others. Her palms are being immolated as they reach my cheeks. But it doesn't hurt. It feels familiar somehow. She draws my ear close to her lips, and she whispers, "You brought this." And that's when the rumbling, thunderous, final wave of flame engulfs us all. And I wake up. Wait. I wake up. Are you shitting me? Fuck. An iPhone is vibrating next to my head on the bedside table. On the other side, a cascade of black hair is spilled over my chest. And spread across the black hair is a wash of blonde hair. Oh, right. It's coming back to me. Blackjack table. No. Roulette. That's right. Then dancing at Tao, then shots, then ecstasy, then... well, then everything gets kind of muddy. It only pops into my head in flashes, but I do have a clear recollection of someone shouting, "Never stop fucking me." Whoever said it is clearly disappointed now that the fucking has, evidently, stopped. Let me think. I assume the bodies attached to these heads of hair have names, but I have zero clue what those names might be. For some reason, I want to call them kerosene and glycerin, but I'm sure that can't be right. The phone is still vibrating. The screen says it's Evan. I have no reason to believe the phone is lying, so I answer. "Hey, everything okay?" I roll out from underneath kerosene, the dark-haired one, obviously. She reflexively grabs from my side. "Glycerin, but I think I'll call her Gliss," rolls the other way and falls off the bed. She moans, but doesn't wake up. Maybe she knocked herself out. I don't know. Whatever. Evan answers my concerned salutation. "Yeah, everything's fine. Why?" "Because it's..." I glance at my watch. "Oh, it's noon." "Well, still, it's noon on a Saturday. It is Saturday, right?" He laughs. "Yeah, dude, it's Saturday." Jesus, the week went fast. "Anyway, there's no emergency?" "No, man, I'm not at work. We're going car shopping today," I thought. Shit. That's right. I've been putting it off because I just don't care that much, but I should get one. I haven't really driven a car in damn near 12 years. I had a piece of shit Corolla in high school, but that fucking died as I was trying to get the hell away from home to make it to training. And then I got deployed to Iraq, so... Iraq? I think it was Iraq. Pretty sure that was my first deployment. Honestly, I can't remember anymore. But I had to drive in the Middle East a couple of times, and I really learned to hate it. And after I mustered out, I just kind of went from train to plane to fucking llama and shit for a long time, deciding what my next move was going to be. I've only been back in Vegas for a few months, and because this ridiculous apartment is right in the middle of the strip, I haven't much needed a car here either. But then last week, I was with this chick I picked up at the Cosmopolitan, and she wanted to go fuck in the desert because that's like her thing or whatever. She said that when you're fucking and come into the earth, you're replenishing the planet's life energy or some kind of Burning Man bullshit. Didn't really care. Her ass was so perfect she looked like a cartoon character. If she had said she wanted to fuck in a feeding trough, I would have made it work. And so, we were in the middle of the desert, and after we finished replenishing the planet, she got pissed about the fact that I said thanks. Which is just something I say. It's kind of a reflex, not sure where I picked it up, but, I mean, if you have a problem with it, go fuck yourself. I'm just trying to be polite. But she yelled, "I'm not a whore," pulled her pants up over her bubble butt and jumped into her stupid Mini Cooper or whatever it was and left me there. At that point, I started to suspect she maybe has some issues. And of course, there's no cell service in the middle of the fucking desert. So I had to hump it like 10 miles in the goddamn cold-ass desert night before I could get enough bars to call Evan and wake him up to come find me, which is incredibly shitty because he had just come off working third watch for Vegas Fire and Rescue for 3 nights in a row because they were short-handed, so the poor guy should have been allowed to sleep. But he's the only person in town I still know well enough to call in the middle of the night to drive out and pick me up in the desert. We've known each other since we were 2, so he did it because he's a goddamn champ, but as we were driving back, he did say, "Bro, you gotta get a car." Am I rambling? I feel like I'm rambling. I do that. Sometimes out loud, but usually just to myself. I try not to let anyone see, but I can't shut my fucking brain off. I think I need coffee. I head out of the bedroom and into the kitchen to make coffee. By which I mean drop a pod into a thing that looks like R2-D2. And make toast. If I can. This toaster that came with the apartment is so fancy it took me like an hour to figure it out the first time. I'm still not sure I have it right. "Yeah," I sigh. "Let's go fucking car shopping." He laughs again. He's such a good dude. "That's the spirit. You ready to go now?" I glance through the open bedroom door at Carrie and Gliss. Gliss is snoring pretty loudly. I take that as a sign she didn't knock herself out. "You're not alone?" he asks. It's a rhetorical question. Again, guy has known me for 28 years. "No, but I can be ready in an hour." I can probably be ready sooner, but I don't know how long it's going to take to get Jolie and Witherspoon. No, probably not. Out of here. As we continue talking, I wander over to the living room. I suppose. This is one of those apartments where every space just kind of blends into the next. I don't have much in the way of furniture, so it's sort of hard to determine where one part ends and another begins, but I stand in what I'm calling the living room and stare out the window. Window. Ha. This whole fucking place is nothing but windows. Floor to ceiling. All the way around. Corner apartment, on the strip, overlooking everything from the fountain at the Bellagio to the faux Eiffel Tower at the Paris to the fake Statue of Liberty at New York, New York. Seems fitting. Because I'm not supposed to be here. I'm a fake king in a fake castle looking out over a fake kingdom. In fairness, it's not like I didn't earn it. I did, I suppose, depending on how one defines earning. Is it earning if it comes at other people's expense? I start wondering, can anyone ever really get anything in life without taking something from someone else in the process? Those steps we climb to get where we're going? More often than not, they're built on top of the discarded bodies of the less fortunate. And suddenly, I'm thinking about Nadir. And then I get fucking sad. Because all Nadir was trying to do when he came on as our platoon translator was to keep his family safe from being shot or blown the fuck up, and somehow I managed to fuck that up real bad and get him killed. And then I remember that Nadir wasn't the first person I'm responsible for having managed to get killed. And then I get fucking sadder. Christ. My only job as an EOD tech was to defuse and dispose of shit that can blow you up, and then me and Nadir and 3 other guys walk right into a fucking explosion that was created by a goddamn 12-year-old. Killed Nadir and the others. But for whatever bitter joke of a reason, I lived. And by virtue of that bullshit we went through, I managed to wind up falling ass backwards into all this damn money that I never asked for and don't even really want. But that's the way it goes, isn't it? Some people get shit on and die. Some people get shit on and live. And some people get shit on and then get to wipe themselves off with more money than they can spend in 5 lifetimes. I don't know why that last one is me. I've given up trying to figure it out. But it is why, after kicking around for a few years trying to decide what to do with myself, now that I'm all rich and fancy and everything, I moved back home. Because nobody but Evan knows me anymore, and I don't have to explain myself to anyone. Because Vegas... well, Vegas is the kind of town where a terrible fucking tragedy can occur on Sunday, and by Wednesday everybody's already gotten back to whatever fucked up selfish hedonism they're into. The kind of place where I feel at home. Because it is home. It made me. And now it has to own me. So I bought this crazy corner penthouse that overlooks my city, so I can sit up here high above everyone and look down on them all with a big suck-my-dick expression plastered all over my face. That's probably something I should talk with my shrink about, but then I don't really think it's all that complicated. I must be rambling in my head again, because the next thing I hear is, "Okay? Tyler? Dude? Okay?" I actually forgot that I was holding the phone against my ear. That's disturbing. "Yeah. No. Wait, what? Sorry?" I pretty well plead. "I said I'll meet you at the Land Rover dealership at 2. "Why do I have to get some fancy new car?" "Because you can afford it, and because I'm not picking you up in the fucking desert again. You feel me?" "Yeah, I feel you. Bro, are you okay?" He sounds concerned. Shit, is my inside my head voice creeping out to my mouth? "Yeah, man, I'm okay. I pause to debate how much I feel like sharing. "Yeah? You just what?"
I was having a dream when you called.
"Kay? What kind of dream?"
Seems like a reasonably straightforward question. "I have no idea. Something about heaven and tits."
I can feel Evan's brow furrow on the other end of the call. "That's specific. You want me to come pick you up?"
"No. No, I'm okay. I'll see you soon."
"Okay, brother. See you in a bit. Peace." Evan never says goodbye. He always says peace. I have no idea if that's with everyone or something special he reserves for me. As I'm pulling the phone away from my ear, I get, "Oh my God, what the fuck happened to you?" At least it sort of sounds like that, only way more slurred and with fewer definite consonants to distinguish the sounds as actual words, but I get the gist. I turn around and Kerosene is standing in the doorway, naked, teetering a little bit. She's got a nice body. Fake tits, but they're good ones at least. She clearly spent somebody's money on a quality surgeon.
She's pretty too, in a please, please look at me kind of a way. I think she told me she and Gliss are from Virginia. The Virgin Islands? Fuck, man, I'm starting to get worried about my memory.
Regardless, assuming I heard her question right, and assuming she's not talking about my cock for some reason, she's not. I have an amazing cock. I like to think it's my best quality. I imagine she must be referring to the scars. I got mauled by a gazelle on safari.
"Holy shit, really?"
she maybe mumbles.
"No."
If I thought I might like her at all, I'd keep fucking with her a little bit, but there's no chance of us grabbing breakfast and getting to know each other, so dragging out the joke feels like a waste of energy. I just want to get her and her friend, sister, fuck, I hope it's not her mother, out of here. I'm used to women having reactions when they see the scarring on my chest and back and sides for the first time. Hell, when I saw it for the first time, I almost cried. Not because I'm vain or because I was worried about how people would view me or whatever, but because it looked so painful. I don't remember being in pain. I was in a coma for like 2 weeks after the explosion, so it felt false to get all bent out of shape about it. Because I was still alive and I had no real memory of being in pain or shock or anything like that. But when I saw it for the first time, I felt like I had an obligation to feel something. So I got all misty so that the nurses and doctors could pat me on the shoulder and tell me everything was going to be okay. Seemed like they needed it. I wonder how she didn't notice it last night. Nah, not really. She was high, it was dark, and after we got naked, I was behind her for most of the festivities. In fact, she and the other one were so high that I debated whether bringing them home was the right thing to do. But then I remembered, I don't really give a fuck. And now I need them to go. But I should be thoughtful about it.
"Hey, can you grab your friend and get the fuck out?"
Thoughtful. Please. She says something that may be, you asshole, or go fuck yourself, or less probably, you got it, sorry to be a bother. But whatever it is, it has motivated her to scramble back into the bedroom where I hear her rousing Rapunzel from the floor. I turn back to the window. The street below is teeming, like always. People rushing to whatever, do whatever fucked up thing it is they came here to do. I spread my arms out and press my dick against the glass. You, my royal subjects, I piss on you all. I don't say it aloud. I just think it. I may be crazy, but I'm not insane. God damn it, I need to slow my brain down. That dream was... what the fuck was it? And when did I start dreaming again? Have I been dreaming for a while and didn't know? Shit, am I dreaming right now? Who's to say this whole fucking reality I've been living isn't just some dream that I will wake up from just like I woke up from the last one? No, fuck that. I'm not in the mood for an existential crisis today. I hear, you're a fucking dick, go fuck yourself, from behind me, and the door slams shut. I better go get in the shower. Just then, the fire alarm goes off. Loud. Fuck. What the fuck? A sniff. I smell smoke. What the hell is... maybe I am still dreaming. I must be. Am I? Or did kerosene and glycerin betray me and set the sheets aflame? Would they? Did they? Fuck those fucking... how could they? I cough. I can feel my chest tightening. Oh shit, oh shit, where's it coming from? Where the fuck? I run into the bedroom. Nope. The sheets are white and crumpled and there's some errant black and blonde hairs, but that's it. But the smoke is definitely filling the space. Shit! Where is it coming from? The alarm is blaring. I would say it's deafening, but it's not. It's jarring, shaking, screaming. I run back into the living area and look to my right, and that's when I see the toaster. Smoking. Flames shooting up from the inside. Like the whole silly apartment, the exterior of the toaster is made of glass, so I can see the bread burning and shriveling to a crisp through the clear pane. It suddenly occurs to me that if the apartment were on fire, that's what I would look like to all the people on the street watching me burn. And for some reason, that gives me an incredible sense of relief. I need to slow down my brain. It feels like it's on fire. It always feels like it's on fire these days. Maybe it always has. Maybe a shower will help. Maybe it'll wash off the smell of smoke. And booze. And sex with strange women whose names I don't know. Maybe I'll turn the heat on the water up as high as I can and see if I can scald the rest of my skin off. Maybe I'll open my mouth and swallow it all in. Maybe I'll drown. Maybe I'll punch a hole in the sky and sneak back into heaven to find my angel. Or shit. Maybe I'll just get dressed and go buy a fucking car. It's all the same to me.
Chapter 2. Maddie. There is a right way to do everything. A right way to make toast, for example, or the right way to get to work, or take your clothes off once you get there. Toast is easy. You pop the bread in, make sure the setting is halfway between 3 and 4, and push down that little lever. Up pops perfect toast. Getting to work can be trickier. Sometimes I have to make snap decisions because of traffic. I work just off the strip here in Vegas, so traffic is something I can't really avoid. But I can plan for it by learning all the secret access roads around the casinos. Taking off your clothes on stage is definitely a process, and if you do it right, it's just like toast and nothing at all like getting to work. You gotta do that tease first, right? Shake the moneymakers a little. One strap here, another there. Make those guys work for the big reveal. You gotta do that little ass wiggle as you drop one bra strap, then the next, and then... ta-da! Easy. Money. That is. Which is why I do it. Why else would I? It's not my first choice. It's not even my 30th choice. But it's the one that I've got in front of me. And I need it. Money. To, you know, live and everything. Hell, quick, easy money is why everyone does it. Pretty much the only girl I know who actually thinks of stripping in Vegas as a career is... You're late, Scarlett. Her. Raven. Bitchy boss extraordinaire and the oldest stripper down here at Pete's. She's 37, so not really old, but whatever. If I'm still getting naked for money at 37, well, I just won't be. That's all. Which is why doing things the right way is such a good idea, and why I'm sticking to my plan. No matter how much money I go home with each night, there's no way I'll end up managing a strip bar in Vegas 10 years from now. Of course, if you had asked me when I was 18 what I'd be doing when I was 25, I might have said a lot of things, but pretty sure none of them would be this. So best not to get overconfident. That's the third time this month. I glance at the clock as I walk towards the dressing room. 5 minutes is technically late, so I don't argue. Just drop my bag next to Raquel and get busy. Hey, sweetie. Raquel says as she glues her eyelashes on, big crowd tonight. Good, I say, rummaging through my bag to find my outfit. It took me a while to get used to being called sweetie and honey and baby by other women, but I'm a go-with-the-flow kind of girl, so I caught on quick enough. You got any regulars coming in tonight? Raquel asks. She's just trying to make conversation, but I'm not really here for conversation. I don't believe in regulars, I say. It's my standard answer. I just don't understand that, Jasmine says, catching up on the conversation as she comes in from the stage, clutching her bra and panties. They pay good. It's almost like a regular paycheck if you work them right. I don't want to work them right, and I won't be here long enough to care about a regular paycheck. Plus, Raquel says in her sing-song voice, sometimes they take you home and... She does a wink-wink with the one eye that already has the fake lashes glued on. I don't believe in that either, I say, finding my outfit and stripping bare. I adjust my girls in the cups and then get busy on my garter and stockings. 3 minutes later, I'm slipping on the stilettos. Why do you wear that? Jasmine says. It's not what they want, honey. I shrug. I think it's sweet. Very girl next door, you know? Jasmine makes a face. The girl who lived next door to me growing up was a crack whore. Not a good comparison. Fair, I say. Well, I lived next to... But I stop, because I realize I'm about to divulge something personal about myself. That's not part of my process. To a church, I say, recovering. And this is probably something they'd wear. Huh? Raquel laughs. Baby, no church girl is climbing into bed with her boring church boy wearing that. True, but I'm done with this conversation, so I let it drop. My typical outfit is what you'd call virgin wedding night. It's usually white or pink or sometimes pale blue, but it's always made of cotton and a little ruffle somewhere and a little satin bow between my tits.
I like it,
Otis says from the door. He is the dressing room guard. More like a peeping Tom, but whatever.
Makes you look wholesome.
Thank you, Otis. That's exactly what I'm going for. Because I'm trying to hold on to some part of the life I used to have. Even here. I wrap my long auburn hair up into a bun, pin it high on my head, and slip the blonde wig on. It comes with pigtails.
You look like jailbait. Raven says, pulling up her black stockings, not girl next door.
Maybe, I say, unwrapping a pink sucker and giving it a lick. It's my only stage prop. But don't knock the power of youth. I'm pretty sure that's why I take home 4 figures on a good Saturday night and you take home 3.
Bitch.
The rest of the girls erupt in laughter, but I'm already leaving, so I don't catch whatever comeback Raven throws at me. She's sensitive about her age. I'm not only good at devising the perfect process for every possible scenario, I know how to find a person's weakness and use it against them.
I developed it as a way to deflect, to protect myself, and eventually it just became a part of me. It's kind of what I do out on stage. I analyze, I critique, I process shit and make predictions. I'm here to make money. I have very specific reasons for taking my clothes off in front of strangers, and none of them include finding regulars or letting one of these people take me home for a night of extracurricular sexual favors. As soon as the stage lights hit me in the eyes, I morph into someone else. This girl, as opposed to that girl. This girl is carefree and innocent, blind to the cruel ways of the world, sheltered and pure. At least, that's what I want these men to think. They want that, right? The pure ones. As long as that virtue doesn't prohibit them from sucking a cock, that is. I stifle a laugh as my hand automatically grabs the pole in the middle of the stage. I swing lazily around it as I enjoy the bubblegum sucker in my mouth. I don't do gymnastics, upside down with my thighs wrapped so tight around the brass pole they make squeaking sounds. I just saunter around, lick my candy seductively, flash my eyes at them all innocent and shy. I tease them, and I don't even have to do much either. Just let them look at me, take off my top, wiggle around, and pretend I'm having the time of my life. That these men are my secret fantasy, that they might be the one to take that innocence away tonight. Blah, blah, blah. My point is, I don't really give them much out here. I don't want these guys to think, hey, this bitch has talent. She was born to fuck that pole. I don't want them thinking about anything except how many bills they need to stuff into the strings of my panties in order to get my attention for a few more seconds. I don't need them to think. I just need them to forget who they are, why they're here, and what happens when they leave. I need them to see the character I'm portraying, not the woman I am. And it works. They always make a few lewd comments when I come out dressed up like, as Raven put it, jailbait. There's the usual jabs about looking like someone's little sister, mostly to get the older brother in the group riled up. And, of course, they have to go one step further. I'll be your daddy, little girl. Gross. But very predictable. And I like predictable, so I don't even mind it. Because in my experience, surprises are very rarely a good thing. Predictable is safe. Predictable has rules. It makes sense. For instance, I'm predicting that this room is filled with about 300 men with money in their pockets. Pete's isn't the classiest strip joint, but it's not a dive either. And there's a cover charge to get in. These guys aren't here to wallow in self-pity at the bar over some bad week at work. They're here to get a hard-on, maybe a lap dance so they can come in their jeans, and then go back satisfied to whatever girl they're avoiding at home in bed. Or maybe they don't even have a girl. Maybe this is just the way they like it. Romance from afar, paid for in single bills, one stage act at a time. No commitment, no expectations, no reality. That's how I like it. So there's those guys here, too. I bend low, opening my legs to give the group of guys in front of me a nice panty shot. They beckon me with dollars. One holds up a 20, so I ignore his cheap friends and stare him straight in the eyes as I wiggle, licking my sucker, twirling my pigtail between my fingertips, my ass so close to the floor I start to worry about getting the little teabag ruffle dirty. So, 300 men, give or take a dozen or two. Once my act is over, I'll go out on the floor to see if anyone wants some special attention. I'll do a dozen or so private lap dances, hands off only. I follow the rules and make no exceptions. And then I'll do one final act towards the end of the night for people who came in late and missed the first one. Then, voila, night over. Scarlett counts her money, changes her clothes, turns back into Maddie, and goes home. Moneybags gives me a wink, so I stick to him for a little longer. Getting close and bending over so he can tuck that 20 into the back of my panties. I can't afford to give him all my attention. That would piss the other guys off. But he pulls back the string near my hip and tucks $20 worth of attention next to my skin. So I turn, slip a strap over my shoulder, and give him first look at one of my girls. He smiles, coyly. He's kinda cute, I realize. But then I let that thought wander away as quick as it appeared. I would never, ever date a guy who came here and saw me dance. Ever.
Logan, he yells over the music, like I care what his name is.
But then he takes a 50 out of the wad of bills he's holding in his hand and waves it in front of me, capturing my attention with a come-closer gesture with his finger. I look at his friends, at a few other guys sitting up in the front, and give them a little attention, too. They tuck bills into the panty strings at my hips. Raven will chew me out if I pick a favorite while on stage. That shit is for later, she'll snap. But eventually, because I want that fucking 50, and only after I've taken off the baby doll nighty and throw it off to the side of the stage where I exit, just to make it easy to collect when I'm done, I go back to him. I bend down, legs open, ass wiggling close to the floor, and smile. Scarlet, I say over the music.
Ah, he says,
and then he leans forward and says, just loud enough for me to hear and no one else,
you don't look like a Scarlet.
I recoil a little, but just a little. Patrons don't get to rattle me. What does a Scarlet look like? I ask, my tone teasing.
Like you, he says, but without that stupid wig covering your blazing red hair.
This time I more than recoil. I stand up, thinking way too hard about that little offhanded comment. Because that's what it was, right? I mean, all these dumb men have to know I'm wearing a wig. It's what strippers do. Good guess, I say, lowering back down in front of him, shaking my tits a little more, getting my scarlet on. But wrong, I'm blonde under the wig as well. His eyes dart down between my legs and he nods his head.
Prove it.
I laugh as I coo. Pay me. He holds the 50 out, but not very far. Not far enough so he can reach me to tuck it into my teabag.
Crawl over here and take it with your teeth, he says.
I smile and stand back up, move on to another group of men across the stage. Fuck him. I repeat my staged seduction with them, but they only offer up singles. I move on to another group and get the same. My act is almost over, so I gotta make a better impression. Mr. Moneybags might have just ruined my take-home by showering me with bad luck. So I work harder. I stand up, begin to ease my panties down over my hips, turn, stick my ass out, and wiggle them down the curve of my ass before pulling them back up and letting the elastic snap against my skin. That gets them all going, and the bills start flowing again. I glance down, see a few fives tucked in with the ones, but that's it. My gaze involuntarily wanders back to Moneybags. He's casually holding the 50 between his index and middle finger, like he's waiting for me. I take my attention back to the men I'm dancing for now, mentally telling him to fuck off. My song begins to wind down, just a few more moments to collect. So I strut back over to the asshole with a 50, sucking on my sucker in a way that makes every man in the room think their cocks are my candy, and drop right in front of him, legs open. I debate with myself, hard, for less than a second. Then I decide to hell with it, and pull my panties aside quickly to give him what he wanted.
No fair, he laughs. You're bare.
I shrug, then snatch the 50 from his fingers and say, I gave you exactly what you paid for. But he grabs my wrist as I try to pull away. He leans in, close, and then he growls,
Carlos didn't get what he paid for, and he's out of patience, Madison.
He lets go before I can even properly freak out. Stands up, turns his back, and walks off. My song ends, and the lights go out, leaving me in the dark to grab my nightie as I make my exit and remind myself why I'm here. Good set, Raquel says as she brushes past me to make her way out on stage. Thanks, I hear myself mumble, almost stumbling into the dressing room. I stuff my money in my backpack and take a seat in front of the mirrored vanity Raquel just vacated. And look at myself. Take a good, long look at myself. I pull off the wig, still staring at the reflection. There's not one thing I like in that mirror. Not my green eyes, not my high cheekbones, not my small nose or even the deep Cupid's bow of my lips. I hate all of it. Hey, Raven says behind me. My eyes meet hers in the mirror. Cleo called in sick, so one of us will have to do an extra act tonight. Not me, I say. I wouldn't waste the opportunity on you, she snorts. I'm giving it to Jasmine. Really? Jasmine says next to me. She pauses her application of red lipstick. Thanks, Rave. I appreciate it. My kid's daycare bill went up this month, and I'm strapped. I need all the attention I can get. Well, if Cleo calls in again, Raven says, she's out of here, and you can pick up all her acts until I find someone new. Raven smirks at me as she says it. She knows a girl like me, single, no kids, college-educated, would not be here if I had any other options. So she thinks she's getting even with me for making that crack about her age. I do need the money. And after Cleo, Jasmine makes more money than all of us. She goes for the slutty look, which, as she pointed out earlier when she turned her nose up at my outfit, these men like a lot more than the girl next door look. I have a few moments of regret for not following her lead. My phone buzzes in my backpack. And turn that fucking phone off when you come into work, Scarlett. Raven says, it's been vibrating since you went out on stage. My heart skips a beat. This cannot be good. First, that asshole who works for Carlos showed up out there in the club. Now someone's been calling me the whole time? I suck in a breath of air as I reach for it, but the anxiety eases as I see the name on the screen. Hey, I say after tapping accept. What's up? Jesus fucking Christ, Annie says. My night just went from bad to fucking bad in the span of 20 minutes. What happened? My heart is beating fast again. Did Carlos get to her? Is he going after my friends now? My fucking date, Annie wells. He left me at the motel. Motel? I ask, confused. But she sounds like she might start crying, so I go into crisis management mode. Shit. Can't you grab a cab? He took my fucking purse. I got no money. He got my cards, too. Jesus, I say, trying to picture all that shit happening so early in the night. I'm stuck here, Maddie. Can you come get me? Where's here? I ask, getting a very bad feeling about this, because I'm totally confused. Annie isn't a stripper. She's a call girl, a very high-class one. She's the one who suggested I take this job, against my better judgment, to make some quick cash. She usually works out of five-star hotels. The Aria, or the Bellagio, or the Four Seasons. Some cheap-ass fucking place on the north end of town. Just standing on this disgusting carpet is making me itch. What the fuck are you doing out there? I ask. Seriously, nothing she's saying makes sense right now. I have no clue. I met him at Planet Hollywood, and then he said, come with me, and we ended up out here. My gun was in my purse, too, she says on the verge of hysterics. Shit, I say. Shit is right, she says. I'm so fucking tired of this shit. I'll come get you. Just stay put. You're not leaving, Raven says, listening in on my convo. I'm already short tonight. Fuck. I mumble into my phone. Can you call Diane or Caroline? No, she says. They're working the whole night. Their phones are off. My calls didn't even ring through. The four of us share a house out in the desert. They're all call girls. I actually went to college with them, then lost track, but ran into Annie about 3 months back, just when this Carlos shit was starting to go sideways. They had an empty room in their house, so I signed on to be roommate number four. I didn't know they were call girls at the time. I found that out after. Four girls went to college together, three of them became hookers, and one is a stripper. probably not a great ad campaign for UNLV. But I figured it couldn't hurt to disappear from my usual surroundings for a little bit while I decided what to do about this Carlos business, right? Good while it lasted, I guess. Because obviously Carlos has found me again. But back to Annie. Can you hold tight until after my shift? I ask. Annie gulps on the other end of the connection. Oh my God, I just want to go home, Maddie. I get it, I say, cutting her off. Raven is still standing behind me, tapping her fucking stiletto on the floor with her arms crossed across her tits. Like I'm on her last nerve. I don't want this job, but I do need this job. Text me the address and I'll be there as soon as I can. I quickly change outfits and head back to the floor, constantly scanning for the henchman set to warn me of my outstanding obligations. But he's gone. Or he's hiding in some corner waiting to spring on me, snatch me away, take me out to the desert, and kill me. I have to laugh at that. I mean, this is a serious situation, but I didn't do anything wrong. It's not my fault I owe Carlos Castillo $185,000. It's his stupid daughter's fault. I decide I'm overreacting. Carlos sent the guy to rattle me into delivering what I owe him. Even though I don't owe him. I was planning his daughter's wedding. He gave me $200,000 for the event. What did he expect me to do with that money? I spent it on wedding shit. Catering and the church and the reception hall. All but $15,000, which was all I was able to return to him after his daughter called off the wedding and Carlos decided he deserved a refund. You don't get a refund on a wedding because your stupid daughter was pregnant with another man's child and her fiancé called it off. It's not even reasonable. But Carlos Castillo isn't exactly a reasonable man. He's some Mexican tequila mogul, but I'm pretty sure that's mostly a front for his drug-running empire. How was I supposed to know he was some kingpin? I mean, really? I don't run in those circles. And what kind of drug lord books a wedding planner online without even meeting her? Well, maybe that should have been my first clue. I just can't win. I really thought I could make a go at the whole wedding planner gig. I mean, I fucking majored in business at UNLV. I'm capable. I'm smart. I have ideas. Good ideas. No, great ideas. It should have worked. But then again, I did have that pet bakery business and the whole multi-level marketing makeup business and the information research business. Not to mention the cleaning business. All of which failed. Miserably. And now I'm in debt up to my fucking eyeballs. Every credit card I have is maxed out, and my parents have already loaned me more than $20,000 for the first two businesses. I owe them, too. They're too nice to ask for it back, thank God, because I don't have it. I don't have shit. My newest venture, aside from stripping to pay back Carlos money I don't owe him so he doesn't start imagining me better off dead than alive, is an aerial photography business. I already have 10 realtors on my books looking for video of their multi-million dollar property listings. This one is a winner. I can feel it. I know it. I've tried and lost too many times not to catch a lucky break soon. I even have a cool drone to take the photos and shit. It set me back almost 2 months of stripper pay, money I should have been paying Carlos, but it was worth it. And fate seems to agree. Because tonight I make more than $2,000 in lap dances before closing time. I have so many customers, I don't pick Annie up from the dumpy motel on the north edge of town until well past 3 a.m. She's too tired to complain, so she slips wordlessly into the passenger seat of my car and doesn't speak again until 45 minutes later when we enter the living room of our modest four-bedroom ranch house. I quit, she says, flopping down on the couch and kicking her shoes off so hard they go flying into the wall. What? I ask, sinking into the cushions next to her. I've had it, Maddie. What the fuck are we doing? She looks up at me with sad brown eyes. We're educated women. Why the hell do we have to sell ourselves just to make a living? I start to say, I don't sell myself. We're not the same. But then I decide that right now isn't about me, and tried to be a good friend instead. I shrug. Bad luck, I say. That's all. It's not bad luck, she says. It's something else. It's bad planning or bad decisions or bad... whatever, I don't know, but it feels like fate. Fate? I laugh. No, that's not what this is. It can't be. I can't believe that this is what fate has planned. We're not fated to be losers, Annie. We're just stuck, that's all. Men, she says, growling out the word. You don't owe Carlos shit, and no matter how much I make, I can't seem to get ahead. Fucking student loans and credit cards and that damn car. I want to burn it. And Kimberly, why the fuck do I give her 50% of my take when she only fixes me up with guys like this all the time? All the time? I ask, completely confused. Annie's clients are high-end. Aren't they? Since when? Annie looks away, sighs. We might have embellished our status a little. Embellished how? And then I get it. You don't get guys like this all the time, do you? Assholes who leave you stranded in shady neighborhoods? Low-class jerks in town for what, a convention? Trying out the old what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas thing? Her guilty, embarrassed silence is the only answer I need. Wow, she's not raking in the money. She's not some high-class call girl. She's nothing but a fucking prostitute. Not that I'm judging. I mean, come on, I'm a stripper. I have no room for self-righteous judgment. But it makes me sad. For her and for me. I don't know why I didn't see it earlier. Why live out here in the goddamned desert, sharing a house with two other women in the same profession, and a damn stripper, if you don't have to? I want to go home, Annie says, sniffling. I want to go back to Iowa, find my high school boyfriend, and pretend I didn't fuck up my whole life with one bad decision after another, starting when I got out here for school. I just want to be 18 again and start over. I just stare at her for a second, imagining this other life she lived before she knew me, and then thinking about the other life I lived before I knew her, and how she made bad decisions starting at 18, and how at 18 bad things, one after another, just kept delivering themselves to me. And now, 7 years later, here we both sit. It makes me want to cry, or scream, or run away, or all three. But I can't. It's not who I am. I can't quit. I can't lose it and give in to weakness. I have to just knuckle down and keep going. Sometimes, I wish I was a quitter. It would be easier. I'm tired, Maddie. She curls her legs up onto the couch, placing her head in my lap. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to fuck strangers for money. I don't want to drive that car. I don't want to live in Vegas. I want this to be over. I want to go home right now. I play with her long, dark hair as she gives in to sleep, silent and introspective, and wishing I had such an easy way out. It's not the money I owe Carlos, either. It's everything else. This is home. This is all I have. There's no going back to something else, something easier. Some more innocent time when things were good. Those days are gone. Forever. All I can do is pull myself back up to ground zero.
Chapter 3. Tyler. There she is again. My angel. I see her coming towards me with my tea like the last time. Her red hair in sharp contrast to all the clean and white that surrounds her, and in its fiery redness it feels like a portent of things to come. I feel like I know her. Do I? Have we met before? Nah. Probably just seems that way because she's an angel and she's trained to make you feel comfortable and loved. I bet they have whole seminars on that shit in angel school. Because I don't know her, and she doesn't love me. We're just tacitly agreeing to this whole interaction because, I don't know. Because we're both dead, I guess. We have that in common. She's smiling. I'm not. Because I know what she doesn't. That in about 2 minutes, this whole place will be soaked in fire. Maybe it's because I touched her tits the last time. Yeah, you know what? That's probably it. I sullied up this whole joint with my craven, feral desire. So I'm careful not to press up against her now. I keep my distance, I say, thank you, super polite, and... fuck. Flame.